Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082. Do you like Sheffield Live?
You're listening to Sheffield Live.
Yeah, this is the poet Benjamin Zephaniah coming down your radio wire, and you
Sheffield
are listening
Live
to Sheffield Live on
93.2
FM.
You're listening to Sheffield Dawn on 93.2 FM, Sheffield Live.
Yeah, welcome to Sweet Talking Sport, and I think we've got a full house here. We got the man called G.
Yes, welcome people
in the studio.
Happy New Year to everybody.
And also, CV is also here too.
Yeah, good afternoon, evening, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and it's the first one in the new year. How did your guys spend New Year's Eve?
New Year was all right for me. I was just with my peoples them. I mean, two granddaughter them run me up and down, and I play hide and seek. So yeah, everything was nice.
Yes, me and the good wife, as always, for the past how many years. I look through window, watch fireworks while we are hug up and kiss each other. But happy New Year, you know.
Wait.
Yes, me, I expose myself, but I saw it go.
Oh, it's good, G.
Oh,
one more time. Rewind that.
Right, yeah, that's again. Turn up, bang window, look out a window, watch firework while we are hug up, kiss two, take two kids to warm. That's how we start the new year. Hug up and kiss.
Yeah, man.
Well, with that
wife
further
ago, you know.
I hope nobody is listening out there, but if you are,
please keep this show to yourself because the Three Musketeers are large in the studio.
Yeah.
Big time. Want to sort of like talk about the most memorable or the best moment of your sporting memory. So if you just want to take a moment and just think what you're going to say, and I'll kind of like just start the ball rolling. I've not just got one sporting moment. I think there could be quite a few, but after deliberation, I've kind of like picked out three out of my basket. And not in any kind of like particular order, but most memorable or best sporting moments. Like I said, this is not in no particular order. I'm going to go for the 14th of July, which was the Euro final. And it was just the way kind of like Spain play football for me, you know. So, you know, it's kind of easy on the eye. They're not predictable. It's not boring. And obviously the best team won. They went ahead 1-0, and then England equalised, and then Spain just in the dying moments made it 2-1 and edged that one. The second memorable moment, I suppose, was talk about tennis. So we're talking about the king of clay, Rafael Nadal, the second most decorative player in the history of the game. Two Olympic gold medals, 103 ATP, which is Association Tennis Professional titles, and that includes 22 Grand Slams. And the third one, Simone Biles, 27-year-old American gymnast, nicknamed Simone, won times four medals, team gold, which their team got nicknamed the Golden Girls, all-round gold, vault gold, and floor silver. So I think for my memorable sporting moments of last year, them kind of like three stick out. And you could choose so many, so many. So over to you guys. I mean, whichever one of you wants to wrap off something, go ahead.
Where the man just come from with this thought about pick top three? I mean,
No. I didn't say right, pick three. Listen, whoa. Hey, Wall on. You know what them said? Bird fly too fast. Miss them nests. And you miss it from time.
Go on then, run it again.
So, I just plucked out three. I never said pick out three.
Oh, that's why I thought a little confusion then. Little
so, just,
apologies.
Just little apologies. Get one bud and clean out your ear all, yeah?
No, that's something for you, bud. So, we are start 2025. Right, I'm going to name one. It was when Lando Norris won his first Grand Prix. If I can find a date on this, when it did that. Bear with me. But yes, that would have been my top one anyway. That would have been my only one, really. Because I was chuffed.
And why would you choose that guy?
Why would I choose him at the moment? Because he's been in with, I forgot what the team's called now. But he's been there with them for how many years? And they're just starting to make a move, really. And for him first win, it was a big thing for the team. And I just thought, yeah, I picked that. That was in 23-24. But can't you remember the date? But still, that would have been my top one there for Lando Norris winning his first Grand Prix in 2024.
Yeah, and I know, so that you're into the F1 scene. So, you know, goes without saying. So, G's gone into the F1 in a fast lane.
Is that the only one then?
Yeah. Well, I have two. And obviously, reasons why I pick it, because it's because no other team's done it in history of England.
Obviously, I'm going to pick that City winning it for the Premier League four times in a row. I'm going to pick that, right? And as I've just explained, because no other team in the history of English football has won it four times in a row. So that's
I hear that.
Right? And then my second one was, right, because I liked it because I don't think anybody really gave him a chance. And it was my against AJ when him touch him up, when him do not go.
But Raul's,
Du Bois.
Yeah.
That
for me was like, they didn't give him a chance. Everything was AJ this, AJ that. And the boy just touched him up proper.
That was a good choice.
They were my two standout.
I mean, I did have that on my shortlist as well, you know, because there could be so kind of like many. And I mean, even like, not really a standout moment, but I think it needs to be acknowledged because when United had so many players through the door, and I think they got about 9 or 10 players in, and, you know, to hit the ground running as they did, I think Wilder deserves, you know, a big kind of respect for that, because that can't be easy, you know, whether that's Pitney team, amateur, you know, School of Excellency or kind of like juniors. So to get so many pros together, I mean, people might say, you know, professional football should be able to just, you know, play in certain positions, but to be where they are, and I'm one what says, you know, come December, come Christmas time, where your team is, that's generally, and it's not true, no luck, you know, hard work and sweat and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, still a bit of a way to go, but you know, I think you know, the definite finish in the top six anyway for me. Depends who comes through the door. The transfer window's open now, so we'll keep an eye on that one. So yeah, I just thought we'd just start the show with something a little bit different. CV, just went for City. And when Joshua got beat up in the ring by the boys.
Beat up?
Went into the F1 arena. And I just kind of like plucked out three, in July when Spain beat England to claim the Euro final champion. And Rafael Nadal retired at 38, who's had a glittering kind of career on the court, named King of the Clay. And Simone Biles, 27-year-old American gymnast, smashing it all over the place. Want to go into a bit of golf. Tiger Woods and his 15-year-old son Charlie were tied for the lead at the end of the first day of the PNC Championships in Orlando. It used to be called kind of like the father and son kind of championships, but they kind of like renamed that the PNC Championships. Pro golfers team up with family members. It's an annual tournament. And for two-player team consists of the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour. Golfers usually is with their sons. And I just want to also talk about Charlie, because this guy is kind of like on the scene big time.
He's following his dad's footsteps, basically, isn't it?
100%.
In fact, the way he's playing, he might even outshine him.
Well, that's what they're saying. He could well do that. And I just want you to listen to this.
At just 15 years old, he's dominating junior tournaments, outdriving seasoned players, and showcasing a swing speed that rivals top professionals. With a poise beyond his years and a legendary mentor in his corner, he's proving that greatness isn't just in his blood, it's in his game. Could this young prodigy truly surpass his father, Tiger Woods, and become golf's next legend?
On a golf course, as I read the name of the golf course, and it had the two letters after it, CC. So I was going to go play a country club. So we're going to have fresh greens, not this bouncy pole.
What made this victory even more remarkable was the tournament's grueling 36-hole format. Golf isn't just about skill. It's about consistency and mental fortitude. For Charlie, this wasn't just a test of his ability to swing a club. It was a test of his focus and strategic gameplay. While other competitors faltered under the pressure, Charlie remained steady, finishing as the only player under par. It's a rare feat for someone his age and highlights his exceptional golf IQ.
I got one for Charlie and the Tiger. Charlie.
Yeah, that's Charlie Woods there. And like G says, he's looking to finish, maybe finish kind of like better than his pops. So Charlie Woods on the scene. And also on golf, I'm going to talk about his kind of like swing speed, because they're saying that his swing speed is something different. I mean, when you hear this, you kind of like will be really shocked. They said that it's kind of like one of the, for his age, is really up there. And because of the power of the swing speed and the technique, that determines how far and the accuracy you can kind of like hit a ball. So obviously he's got a good mentor, which is his pops. Well, the best you could say, with his pops. And his pops, Tiger, was saying that never really pushes him, lets him kind of like feel his way around the course and stuff, with little tweaks here and there. So I mean, you know, I think you have to kind of like big up that. So Charlie is a name to be reckoned with in the future.
I mean, if his swing speed's at 176 miles per hour at 15 years old, the guy's not even matured yet, is he? He's not in his prime for this or anything yet. He's just a come and look what he's doing already.
It's unbelievable, that. You know
what I mean? So, and like you said, you can have the best mentor he could have is his pops, really. And if he's not pressuring him, he's bound to outshine his dad, isn't he? And I'm sure his dad himself would love to see that.
Yeah, you know, something kind of like of a special kind of like talent, you know, and from one special talent to another one. I mean, want to talk about going to athletics. I mean, Shelley and Fraser Price, there was her, there was Tia Clayton and Sharika Jackson, all lining up, yeah. And this was before the Paris kind of like final. And I want to kind of like focus on Tia Clayton, who's 20. And she did her kind of like 100 meter sprints as 10.86. I mean, if we fast forward it into kind of like when they went to Paris, it was Tia Clayton who represented JA at that. Now, she didn't do particularly well. She didn't really get in the top three for a medal position, but she actually finished seventh in Paris. And her time wasn't one of her personal best. But I want you to listen out for that name in the future, Tia Clayton, 20-year-old. So she's got plenty of time on her side
to develop, innit?
To develop big time, yeah. So that's for the JA 100 meters. Watch out for that one.
She'll be taking over from Shelley, innit?
You know? Exactly, yeah, because Shelley Ann Fraser Price has got, what, 3 Olympic Games, won 10 World Championships, 4 Olympic Silvers, 5 times Diamond League, greatest at 100 metres, you know. But tipping Tia Clayton for big things in 2025, so she didn't really make the grade at Paris 24, but I'm sure that her turn will come in the future. So that's the athletics for JA. Want to switch allegiance now, and want to talk that is hooligans isn't, is it kind of creeping back? Now, we're not talking actually in the stadiums, because, you know, they kind of meet at different kind of places. But in Scotland, apparently, for the Glasgow Celtic and the Rangers final, the Beats are looking for 19 youths. I've had a look at these pictures. I can't recognise any of them. But I want to ask our kind of panel, is it coming back? Is hooligan coming back?
Go on, CV. Really? I don't know about that. I don't know nothing about that.
There's been little skippets here and there over the last how many months, and they're on the news about what's been going on with certain teams and stuff. But
really? Yeah. I don't know nothing about that. It's news to me, so please enlighten me. I don't know nothing about no. So basically, what you're looking at there is 19. Is it Rangers or Celtic fans or what?
Just says that they've kind of like highlighted 19 youths. I mean, I'm quite sure that there was more than that, but you know what? The police are probably looking to make an example. So they've kind of like probably got, maybe, you know, the 19 clearest images of people running riot down Argyll Street, setting off flares. You know, some of them wearing Santa hats, covering their face with Santa beard and all them kind of thing there. You know what I mean? And I just wanted to know whether You know, we thought that, you know, if
it had gone away,
if kind of, yeah, is it coming back? You know, is it still happening behind the scenes? You know, what are your thoughts?
The question would be, did it ever go away? That would be the question. Would it be, has it ever gone away?
Personally speaking, I think it went quiet really when it comes to York football hooligans. I mean, look how it was back in the '80s and stuff like that. It was always on the news. You saw it. You heard. You read things in the paper. Man and man were running around meeting at train stations and all these things. And wherever the buck up, game on. But you don't hear about those things that bad no more. So this might be just
probably
a few little incidents that's gone up in Scotland and they're making highlights of it.
I think probably that's because the times you're talking about was the height of the football. It was the height of the football time. So you're talking around the '80s, aren't you, really?
Yeah,
when you're talking about the casuals, aren't you? And you add your various different firms, ain't you? That's what you're talking about. And
enlighten me a little bit more, CV.
I one time did a essay on public disorder. I once did. And I covered a little bit about football hooligan, right? And I talked to another gentleman who did a book, who covered it, who had a little bit about it, about football hooliganism and stuff. And at the time in the '80s, I would have said that was the height of the time. You had football hooliganism from the '70s with the flare bags and all them kind of things, and the Sheffield, Man United, Red Army, and all that kind of stuff. You had that, and where they'd go to each other's and take the cup and all them kind of things. But I think the height of it was more in the '80s, where you started, each individual town or city had its own firm. Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
I'd agree with that. And definitely the '80s.
And I know that. Yeah. I know this city. I had a firm, you know, I can't remember the name of it, but there was a firm there as well. So I'd say and them times, I from going to football back in them days, and obviously seeing it from the outside, how these people acted and how they came together, and you could see from the outside, and you could see some of these I won't call them lunatics, I'd call them people, they were quite sensible individuals actually, from what I could see, and you could tell that there was quite a few of them. And them days, this is from having spoken to a lad who used to take part in these kind of things, said, "Oh well, at times it could be 60 or 70 of you go on a train, go to the other city, and you could go get into a pub and all." And I said, "Really? So what was the sense of that?" But everybody to their own. So I would say the football hooligan thing now has got a little bit more, what we say, on a smaller scale now.
So is that the kind of like another generation, would you say?
I would say it's definitely another generation. But even though there are still some people from back in the '80s who still think that they're...
What wouldn't mind some? Yeah,
who still think that they're
okay
and participating?
And what would your message be to them, kind of like people then?
Well, I would say, if I was someone who was into that sort of thing, right? I would say silliness, isn't it? Really, absolutely pathetic. Fighting over football.
it's mindless, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have to kind of mindless. Agree with that. Man, I kick ball, pan feel, and you fight too. What kind of foolishness is that?
I mean, they say, I'm going to go back in time here, they say that reported tear-ups with fans having a row occurred back in 1880. You
so
know?
Far back.
But it never got the attention in the media and stuff till the 60s. So probably like looking to keep it under. So 1880, people started tearing up. And then, you know, into the public domain, 1960. And like CB said, that it got worse in the 70s and 80s. So you could say that.
I don't want to cut you, but that's when our Iron Lady decided to do war on these hooligans, and decided to say, we're not allowing that. So in that period of time, you had quite a lot of police raids on different firms and that, and. Yeah, and that was through our lady, Margaret Thatcher. She said, I'm going to declare war on these hooligans. And that's why you had all these undercover,
officers in joining and trying to get into it.
The hooligan element now, I would presume, now is a smaller scale. And I would just say, you're not going to see maybe 50 or 60 individuals walking down a road and basically causing havoc. I think it's more kind of arranged, and you might probably only get maybe eight
handful of people, yeah, saying
doing it. So, but as I say, it's quite mindless, really, you know.
I'd love to know what started off the first brawl, really, when it comes to football back in the 80s.
Well, hooligan, hooligan, the name hooligan comes from an Irish family called the Hooligans. They were called the Hoolies. And they, certain times, they got a little bit rowdy, right, and created problems. And the police came, the police would come, and that's how you would get the problems. And that's why, and that's where the name hooligan comes from. It comes from a
family
called
what?
Yeah, this brother, yeah.
Yo,
oh my lord!
You know what I mean?
If you want to look it up,
I look it up from my bicycle right next to
the hoolies. That's where it comes. That's where it comes from.
And from the hoolies, I mean, you know, not only have we got it in the football, but listen to this.
Rashford was left out of the squad to face Bournemouth, but travelled on his own to watch the game and made it into the dressing room at full time. The player was visibly furious and went straight for manager Ruben Amorim, demanding answers as to why he was left out and saying the performance was a disgrace to the club. Several players had to step in, including Kobbi Mainoo, who was very defensive of his manager after his first start since returning from injury. And the two were seen fighting to the ground and couldn't be separated. Mainoo shouting for Rashford to leave the club and that he isn't good enough to wear the shirt. With Rashford clapping back with how he may not be fit to wear the shirt, but at least his brother doesn't wear skirts to watch the games.
What?
Yeah, so from brawling on the streets to fighting in the changing rooms, Rashford and Kobbi Mainoo. Now,
I think that's a bit fake.
You can read into that, but we covered Rashford, remember, last week, like missing from the squad.
He was.
So, and I think there's a little bit. More to that. I think it goes deeper. That
there's a little bit of faking that though. They were fighting in the dressing room. My man saying this and that. I don't get me wrong. I agree with the manager leaving him out because he doesn't rate him now, right? but I don't. Nah.
But I think, you know, I mean, like we said last week, you haven't been there 2 minutes, and now the attitude of, you know, and the body language of a player in training, you know, is one thing, but you'd have thought that a swift little word, you know, behind doors can sort that out. You know, if a coach or manager wants to drapes up a player and bring him to one side and say, listen, you know, I've noticed that you haven't really been yourself, really.
Yeah, don't tell
me. Is
much,
there a problem?
It?
You know, can I help? What can we do to help? You know what I mean? But just to kind of like
drop
admit
a man.
Him, yeah, or drop him
and say,
boy, I don't like your attitude.
But didn't
you know, the cook, it,
didn't he
you
say
know, still waters
trying,
run deep.
Did
you know?
Did say he was trying to help him? He said he was trying to help him. The manager said they're trying to help him. That's what he said.
But you can read into that. Like you say, you know, we've just heard something about Mainu and Rashford brawling. Mm. And then, you know, I don't think you can put your finger on one instant. But I think there's something deep
something's going on.
Something deep's happening.
You might be right, but I don't believe that
recording.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, so, you know, I mean, it's not unusual for players to have a tear up.
No, that happens.
You know,
that
I mean,
happens.
There's been quite a few down at Bramall Lane in the changing rooms over the years,
yeah.
And I've kind of heard some proper stories,
yeah.
And even
I've heard some yard man gone on with some stories.
Yeah.
I've heard some yard man.
So it does happen. But maybe the truth will come out one time anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I wanna kinda like go into talk about a few contracts and stuff, like, you know, just picking at a few bits and pieces to this one. So again, I just want you to kinda like just listen to this, and what do you reckon to this one, yeah?
The maddest one I've heard, right? So I don't want to name the person to tell me this, but on my coaching course, my UEFA B coaching course, it was through the PFA, so it's all either pro footballers, ex-pro footballers are on it, or people who are high up in the sport. And there was a person on it who was in PSG's club staff,
wow.
Quite high up, and it was at a time with Messi, Neymar and Mbappe. And he said Neymar had a clause in his contract that every time he went over to clap the fans after a game, he'd get a couple of $100,000 bonus.
Shut up.
Yeah. He was, I swear to God, no word of a lie. I don't want to name the person that told me.
No.
But he said it's because...
You know, wow. So we're talking contracts here. And, you know, I found it kind of quite interesting. I mean, the guy who was chatting was, he is a Crystal Palace, a defender called Lewis Bryan, 25-year-old defender, playing his trade for Crystal Palace. And, you know, so he was on about Neymar getting a couple of grand for clapping players, because he don't really kind of do that. Now, he was talking about his own kind of contract, and he was on about, you know, we're talking bonuses as well, like 10k per goal, you know, and if the team came third, he'd be talking about 10.6 million. Now that's to share between the team. A player wouldn't get that. So. Little bits and pieces, like we said, just picking them out. I mean,
big business, isn't it?
It's kind of massive business, because as kind of like, you know, if you're kind of generally employed in that through a firm, you wouldn't really sort of like discuss your wages with another person unless you kind of really knew that person, if you were kind of close to them. But you know, things do leak out for footballers. You know, they produce the payroll every so often, what such and such a player is getting.
I mean, like, wage increase as well. I thought this was a quite interesting one as well. 2K per week after 5, then 15, then 20 Premiership starting appearances. Or 1K per week after 5, 10, 20 EFL Championship starting appearances. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, guys? You know? So, I mean, we're really talking some stupid money, obviously.
Yeah, so really, if you've got the right headset, you can work out a right contract for yourself, then, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, to get paid, like you just saying about Neymar, to get a couple of grand for going over and shaking fans, and I'm over there every time I score a goal, me. You know, I mean, every time you score a goal, me, I run right round the pitch, I tap everybody with my knee for tap.
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I could understand that.
Another thing's into your contract, where if you score a certain amount of goals, you're going to earn, well, big business, isn't it? Really? Massive.
Remember, it's not just you what's all doing your contract. You've also got your agent as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I get 100%. That. I get that.
They want peace.
Everybody's that's getting right, a cut, but so what I'm saying, you can work your contract to where that everybody's making a good money out of it yourself and everybody else, isn't it?
I mean, they're saying that, you know, like, this is like for a sub, non-playing sub, what, 1K. A draw, non-playing, same is a grand. If you win and you're playing, 4.6k. Starting lineup is just the same as well. So, you know, I mean, some of these players and the agents, they'll manipulate the contracts to suit. If you don't ask, you don't get.
That's right.
It's just as simple as this. And this one also as well is of some interest to.
You've got young players who are 9 years old. They're like one of the best 9-year-olds in the country, and the clubs are really trying to get them to sign for their club. And because they're the Man City's, Arsenal's, Chelsea's, they've got money to throw here, and they're offering the child's parents to not work, and we'll just cover whatever they're paying you. We'll pay you, and you don't have to work. Yeah, like, and that's for a 9-year-old kid.
Oh, you're. I'm signing that if I'm the kid's parent.
Well, that's what I mean. And then imagine the pressure that the parent then puts on the kid.
Yeah,
and that's where problems start.
That's true. Yeah. Pushy parents, that would.
Yeah, well, that's just going to make it like if that kid now gets released, you've got to go back to work as a parent. Like,
oh,
you're
yeah.
And they're not. Kid. They might not even like football in 2 years.
Yeah.
It's mad. Mad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the other end, you know, before the kind of like get their kind of scholarship, which is like first year pro. I mean, like, you know, at 9 year old, if you've got a gifted, well, 8, 9, 10, you know, if you've got a gifted youth and the club wants you, I mean, this guy, Lewis Bryan, he named like, you know, three big clubs for that. Man City, Arsenal, I think Man United was in there as well. And he was just basically saying that they'll sort of like ask the parents how much cash do they get, you know, what's their wage like, and they'll pay. The club said that they'll pay their wages for basically handing their son over. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
That is madness.
You know what I mean?
That is.
And then if, like I say, if that child then falls out of love with football and wants to leave, then, you know, then parents have got to find work again, you know, so.
So they expect you to pack in your job and they're going to pay the wages what you was on.
That's right.
Per month.
That's right. They'll pay that, you know, for them to kind of like coach.
Wow.
Your child, you know.
But you could see some parents doing that though, couldn't you?
Well, it happens, yeah. It's,
you can see, you don't have to work and make that money.
Yeah, it's for real.
I think some parents would do that, but personally, if it was me, I don't think I'd do that because, as you know, right, anything can happen to your child.
Anything can happen.
Right. Yeah, anything. And as a child, as our colleague said over there, because it's now he and she now, isn't it, who play football, right, can suddenly say, I don't want to do this no more. So then they've got a problem because they've got a mortgage to pay.
Right.
Yeah, they've now got
100%.
So
yeah.
You're taking a big risk.
To me, nah, they can offer you. Sometimes I think clubs will just offer you a certain amount, and generally, sometimes they'll come in and say, "Right, okay, then, right, for your son to play for us, we'll offer you 350,000, right, for you for him to come and play for us straight out." Or they sometimes they'll buy them a house outright. Things like that. That's more better than them saying, "Oh, you don't work." If they buy the house outright, all you've got to make sure you've got heating and pay for the rest.
Just like anything else, yeah.
Or if they offer you 350,000, right, you can buy yourself a house and whatever. Do you know what I mean? But I think it'd be a silly move for if a club came to me and say to me, "Well, you don't need to work anymore. We'll just give you what you was getting at work." Nah,
no, you're taking a big risk there.
That don't make sense. That to me, that don't make sense at all.
But some people would jump on that, like you're saying,
because they see notes, aren't they?
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, CV, you can see, you know, people just jumping on that. You know what I mean? Because half of them would be thinking, "You know what? Well, I don't have to work again."
That's what I'm saying. You don't have to work for how long?
And if their youth's like, say, 9, what kind of pathway is that going to be, you know, for them? You know, but we know that football's career can be short as well.
Very short. And very short.
Like, you know, people can get injured and have bad injuries and, you know, threaten the career. As young as 8, 9, and 10, them kids can fall out of love for the sport, you know? Especially if they're one of their friends don't want to go there anymore, and they might think, "You know what, I'm not really bothered myself," you know? Mm. And if you've got like pushy parents, where does that leave the youth?
Mm.
Where does that leave the parents, you know? I think, you know, if somebody was to say to me, you know, one of the top clubs want my son to play, they said that they're going to pay my wages and stuff like that, what do you think? I'd be saying that I think you need to put some kind of clause in there that if they get rid of your son or they don't want him or he falls out of game, that you've got like a window, like an 18-month window where they're going to pay that. I think you need to be kind of clever and have something like that into the contract.
This is what I'm saying with contracts. You know? You've got to be smart, aren't you, to make sure you're covered 100%, in things you want.
Now, the club might turn around and say, you know, you've got no chance. You know, we can't give you 18, but we might be able to give you 6. Well, you might be able to nudge that up to 12. You know, you've got to negotiate in there because you're like that, your child's agent, basically.
At that moment,
and not just for the child, but for yourself as well.
That's right. You
know,
right.
So it's like a double-edged sword. You know,
kind of remember, like you're saying, kids at young ages and stuff. As they're getting older, they're going to want to be out with their friends and stuff, going out and doing what the friends are doing. There's things like that that could just change their mind. I mean, from a young age, to stick with a game or any sport, whether it's F1, driving, football, athletics and that, it takes a lot of commitment, a lot, and the right kind of people behind you to keep you going as well.
Yeah, so true.
But anyway, I'd if it was me, I'd be like what CV says. I'd rather have something solid like a house and things like that, where, you know, you're kind of covered in a sense, where you could still keep working. And whatever.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what Rico's dad did, didn't he? Rico's dad was working. Rico Lewis's dad's working. Mm. He had a gym. So he was doing his whatever. But City gave him whatever. And Rico went. Well, City were like, he was with City from, I think he's been, you know, from about 6 years old, I think he's been with them.
How old would you say he's now? 20?
20 now, isn't he? 20. Yeah. So, But and my understanding, I'm saying allegedly, like,
yeah.
And my understanding is that when he was on, he was only on like something like a 500 buff,
a week,
a 500,
which buff, is nothing, is it?
Right. And now I think say he's gone up to 25,000 a week.
That's a good pay rise.
Yeah, 20-year-old. Yeah, yeah. So, spot on.
So it shows you how big football is, then, isn't it?
It's massive, yeah.
That's the kind of way we're doing things now.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's that much cash in there. So, you know, it's, you know, there can be some teething going on as well.
But to me, that, to me,
with the agents as well doing it as well, big time.
Well, for me, five hundred buffer a week, and you fling up grind up at 25 a week. That's a massive improvement.
That's a massive, massive,
yeah, 100%. I mean, it is. I mean, you know, when I just peeled off some of them, you play so many games. So the more you play, the more you earn. And obviously, he's got England.
That's
he's in the England setup as well.
International.
And he looks like established as well.
He's England, you know? International. So, yeah.
And I think what kind of like makes Rico more than decent is that he can play more than one position.
That's
too.
That's another thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's another
I've
thing.
Kinda, I've kind of seen him in midfield. I've seen him at the
right back. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the more positions he can play, then the better you are at doing your trade.
So as long as he doesn't run into any brick walls in any way, he could have a long-lasting career for how long and make all of our money.
Yeah, 100%. From discussing contracts, we know it's the transfer window is open. And, you know, I want to talk about from sausage roll to pigs in blankets. I mean, sorry, Danny Rohr, yeah. I mean Danny Rohr. Because what it was, you know, when I went to the derby in November, you know, the thousands of people were singing sausage roll. So, you know, you just automatically think, that's his name. And afterwards, even kind of respected the United fans and said, yeah, I like to thank them for singing out. So,
well, they're taking the Michael, you know, and he's thanking them.
Well, you have to bring captain in at that one, because there's only captain who could probably defend it. You know, but yes, Sheffield Wednesday, they was open to sign a defender, Ronnie Edwards, from Southampton. That's where Danny Rowe kind of like learnt some of his kind of like trade. And it's understood that the 21-year-old was considered one of Danny's top targets this month, as the German looks to try and bolster the ranks for the second half of the season. But the reason why, and it's a strange reason why, the reason why Wednesday missed out on their target, because, you know, conversations broken down. Poor communication between Danny Rowe and the chairman, San Siri. Rowe says that that he's not yet had the clarity he needs from the mouth, it said. So, yeah, it's like, you know, you're telling me that, I mean, you're a championship manager.
Yeah.
Your chairman and the board holds the purse strings.
That's correct.
You have to communicate.
You do.
You know, because everybody knows that, you know, January, you know, people in the shop window, players moving on for various reasons, and you're telling me that communication broke down.
Yeah.
What kind of club are they running up here?
I understand that.
I don't say that too easy, you know.
I'm
concerned.
Yeah.
I'm concerned. Yo, I'm concerned for the captain, because I know he's a regular.
He's
a regular, you know.
You see, what I'm likely to do later on, when we meet up, I'm going to have to ask him. Because
listen.
A guy he's coming. He's right. Oh, he's coming. Is it coming from Southampton? He was coming.
Yeah, he was coming from Southampton.
And he's coming from Southampton, right? Which is now a Premiership side. And because of their miscommunication, and there's no communication.
He missed out on player.
Right, he's going to a team lower than them. He's going to QPR.
QPR.
What's that? Yeah.
And you know something? How that got in the public domain as well.
I know.
Oh, that's sad.
Honestly, you know, and I want to know where the captain has got to say. Because, you know, with that individual.
So you call him individual.
I have to call him that because, as you know, he's a man who loves to predict. He always love people to predict. You know what I mean? But he never predicts himself. So please tell me how this can work. How this can work. You've got a player that you're interested in, right? And because of lack of communication within the club.
Which is foolish talk, right? Really, isn't it?
In gone to a club which is worse than them.
Yeah.
So what is that saying? I've told that guy.
So them not talk, innit?
That's right. What happened to them for?
Not talk.
Them have any communication in there? Them have phone, innit?
Yeah.
They've got phone, them have mouth.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of really, really kind of sad. Hillsborough, the home of Sheffield Wednesday Football Club, was built on a former pig farm.
That's right. So me here.
The ground was built on a 10-acre site. The land was sold for how much? 50 pigs and blanket or something. Yeah. 50 pigs and 50 blankets.
Well, I never knew that.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yes, it was built on a pig's farm, so them say.
I never knew that, but still, it's always good to hear a little history.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's
you're
always
never too
good
old to learn, is
no,
it?
No, it's always good to hear a little history. About, you know, your little backward team them, you know? But anyway, let me carry on.
Yeah, coming to the kind of like business end of the show. We'll dip into the Premiership. 1852, Sweet Talking Sport, 3rd of Friday. Joined by CV and a man called G in the studio. Tomorrow, Manchester City play West Ham, so it's 6 v 13th, and we'll go to CV, Mr. Man City, to talk us through this game. Your predictions, please. Man City against West Ham.
I would expect City to beat them. I'd expect Manchester City to beat them. I watched them last week against Leicester, and as I said to you, I think I said it to you, they did what they had to do. They didn't play well. I didn't say Man City played brilliant, but they did what they had to do. They got the result, what they needed. As I said, Leicester had a few chances, so did City. And City put theirs away, Leicester didn't. So I'm expecting City to probably beat these 2-0.
I think that's going to be a bit of a tight game. City are due to recall, is it Isaac Carbo or... Is a Cobo defender.
Man City,
who's on loan from Benfica.
Oh, yeah.
Pep has never kind of really seen him play, but because of the injury problems and pile up and that, you know, I think that's a kind of decent kind of move, that really. And if West Ham are going to get anything out of the game, they need to tighten up their defence. So I think there could be one goal in it, in that one for that. So yeah, G, what's your prediction for this one?
I think Man City's got it 2-0.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm going to go 2-0 for Man City.
I agree with it because, like I've said, this, you know, some little promise there now. All right, but we get Go pan who next you want? Go pan now. Who next?
Brighton 10th v Arsenal 2nd. That's tomorrow at 5:30.
Is that at the Annex? Is that it?
Yeah, Brighton at home on that one. Brighton 7 games.
Hard game that.
Without a win.
Still a hard game.
They looks like they're trying to focus on the European spot, but expect Brighton probably finish what midway, probably halfway down the table. I would have thought Arsenal will be pushing Brighton all the way. The performances are there, the results are there. It's got to be an away win especially if Arsenal are going to try to. Reduce the deficits from Liverpool. Away win for me.
Yeah, you would think Arsenal would come away with that one, wouldn't you? Especially with the way Brighton are performing at the moment. So.
Yeah, I mean, like we say, I mean, seven games without a win, they're probably going to be looking to keep things fairly tight, you know? But I would have thought their bowls door would get broken tomorrow, you know? Yeah, man.
I'm going to be generous and say 2-1 to Arsenal, but...
I think Arsenal, right, doing all right. They're getting the wins, but yeah, they're struggling.
They're
struggling a little bit. But, and Brighton are not an easy team at home. So, I don't know. It could be a draw, that, you know. That could be a draw.
There you go.
Dip into the Championship. Sheffield Wednesday against Millwall, so we've got 9 against 13th again Saturday kickoff. Wednesday will be feeling quite confident following their 4-2 result against Derby, but Millwall will be a stiffer opposition, you know. So I think that Millwall looking to kind of rise up the table. I think they'll bust Wednesday's bubble tomorrow and provide better opposition than Derby did the other day.
Well, let me tell you, hopefully Millwall will be a sterner test. But you know that game, and I'm going to be corrected by the captain later on, but that game was a little bit tighter than what it was, because Derby was giving them a little bit of a hard time at one bit, right? But then obviously they won, and the lucky goal, you know, the lucky goal where the Matar ball, because Philly Bredgen, Philly captain, he's posting all this stuff about
I saw them.
You know, this little lucky goal. What did he even mean to do? A little lucky goal, right? And he's, like, for me, I'm thinking Millwall could do a little, 2-1 on them.
I'm hearing you for that one. 3 minutes to go. Last kind of prediction we've got here. Watford entertain the Blades tomorrow. Stats not showing much in this one at all. United haven't won in 3. They'll be looking to get back to winning ways, but suffering at the moment with quite a few kind of like injuries. But let's hope that they'll get some help from the new kind of like backers of Sheffield United, the owners. And they're kind of saying that there's money available. And like I said, a few names have come up. Diaz, I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago before the window, and I said that deal's in the bag. Apparently, they've been given the green light to go ahead with that. Diaz hasn't really done it at all for Southampton. Bought from Villarreal for $7 million. And I don't think he's scored any goals. So he'd be looking to hopefully sign on the dotted line and see the Blades through to the final line. I can see that there being a draw. I mean, I hope United can nick it. Again, Wilder's old team as well. So he might want to put one over them too.
Yeah, I was thinking a draw for that one.
I'd say it's a hard game. It's an hard game. So, yeah, if you get draw, that would be a good result, that. A win, well...
Even better. Yeah. Even better. Well, you know, like I said, the first show of the new year, you've been listening to the man called G and CV in Addis Studio, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah, guidance, people.
Yeah, let's go more.